Okay, let's step away really quickly from the emergency certified bill. And let's talk about some other things that happened up in Hartford this week. There was actually a public hearing that took place. There was like a snowstorm in the midst of everything happening. But I promise you, a public hearing did take place. And it was looking at universal free breakfast for Connecticut schools. This was something the governor brought up in his State of the State address at the very start of the legislative session. In fact, the governor and I talked about this right here on the show. And my biggest concern about this was the quality of the food. And what's interesting is another concern that people, of course, have is the money. How much is this going to cost and how do we keep this going, right? We can't just offer it for a year because it's an election year. We have to have something sustainable here. And that was a concern that was actually brought up by State Representative Tina Corpus, who represents Greenwich and joins us now and was asking, actually was quoted in the Connecticut Mirror, funding. How would that be calculated for the state's free breakfast program? And so she joins us now. Representative Corpus, thank you so much for giving us the time and talk a little bit about you sit on the education committee, don't you?
Yes, I do. Okay. Good morning, Melissa, and thanks for having me.
Of course. So this is obviously, I want to make something super clear because I cannot stand. I've already been deemed somebody who doesn't agree with giving kids free breakfast. Let me be clear. No, I have a 7-year-old. I think kids should be eating. I don't think kids should have to worry about where their next meal is coming from. I'm a huge proponent in trying to tackle this issue head on. However, I have some concerns because I cannot stand when we put a program in place and for a year or two it's there, but then we just take it away. That also is a disservice to children. I also don't want to know that, hey, we're giving breakfast to everybody, but it's filled with donuts and crap, essentially. So I want to kind of dive into this a little bit deeper. What came out of the public hearing this week on this proposal?
Well, you teed up the issue perfectly, Melissa, hitting all of the issues that are that come up when we talk about providing universal free breakfast to all. So the public hearing was a very long public hearing, which I always like because it means the public is really engaging. And, you know, the sort of rules of the map was drawn in terms of what the issues will be. On the one hand, there were a lot of advocates for this, including children and young adults who benefited from having free or reduced lunch or free breakfast at school. You know, and the pluses of this are obviously that children can learn better when they are well nourished. And if you provide it universally, there were some arguments made that the stigma of being a child that has free meals provided by the school versus not having those free meals provided is removed when everyone has a universally provided meal. So I would say those were the very strong and compelling arguments for. The questions, I would say, on the other side were, you know, do we need this? Do we need to provide this for kids that are eating at home and will food go to waste? Can we afford this at the state level? And if the state's not fully funding what the proposal says, then are the districts left holding the bag? So I would say that those were the big questions.
Did you get any answers?
Well, you know, it's going to be a debate. What I can say is today the Education Committee is voting whether to JF, that is approve as a committee, this proposal to move forward to the next step. I think that at this stage, we're voting really, the way I view it, because I'm on both education and appropriations, is do I support the idea of universal free breakfast and free lunch to those who are now getting it at a reduced price? Yes, I do. But the real devil is in the details of what this is going to cost. And that rubber hits the road in the Appropriations Committee, on which I also sit.
So I agree with you. I think so. Basically, if this passes in the committee today, it's saying we need to put the time into this. We need to actually like get the details all worked out. And this is worth our time versus if you didn't pass it, we're saying this is not even worth, you know, taking up any of our energy. Am I right in saying that?
Different people view it different ways. There will be people that vote no today on the theory that, you know, siding more on the arguments of we just can't do this. But you, the way you articulate it is how I personally see it. So that will be, you know, informing my vote today. I will be a yes vote on this today. You know, this is a very complicated, as we dig into it, a very complicated funding model. And one thing that has been surprising to me as a freshman legislator who has a finance background is, you know, the issue is we spend a lot of time saying we should provide meals to kids. We should provide meals to kids. We all agree with that. The devil is really in the detail. I really view our job as legislators, not do we believe and wish that we could provide universal free meals to kids. Of course, we all do. It's more, how do we balance this very important priority among all of the other priorities that it is our job to balance?
Well,
that's really the question.
Well, and it drives me nuts, to be honest, Representative Corpus, because it comes down to what is the sexiest headline out there. So if a party doesn't agree with universal meals, then clearly you hate children. I mean, that's basically how the world works today. We've got like 5 to 10 seconds where we can actually pay attention to a headline and then maybe the subheadline. And then we've made a whole decision on not only a person, but an entire party. And so that it drives me crazy. And so I'm glad that you said that. I am concerned about if there's anything I saw during COVID that was probably the most devastating. And this is my biggest sticking point. I have two of them. But I just said them before. During COVID, and we saw this in Bridgeport, specifically we saw this in Bridgeport, but other communities, we spent money on things that we could not sustain. So we got all this money, right? We got it from the federal level, the state level. Great. Awesome. We love that. So we had programs. We had all these. We hired teachers. We did all these great things. That I don't know anybody who would say, no, we don't need more teachers. We don't need more extracurriculars. I mean, that just sounds ridiculous. But then the money ran out. The money ran out, budgets got tighter, and things got cut. And who got blamed? Well, whoever was in office at the time or whatever party was the loudest at the time, that's who got blamed. But in actuality, it's that we had a not sustainable model. And that's what I worry about when we say we want to have universal breakfast for every single district. I think it should be that way. I don't think it should just be for ones that are deemed, you know, low income or land on a certain list. Like, no, kids should be able to eat for free. I got it. I'm with you. How do you sustain that, though? How do you go 1 or 2 years offering it, but then you can't keep offering it? So that's one big thing. And the other, like I said, is that I just don't know what that means. When we say we're going to give free breakfast, are you talking about just giving kids endless donuts and pastries? Because, yeah, that is free breakfast, but that's not great for their health. It's not great for them paying attention. The poor teachers who have to deal with that sugar rush. You know what I'm saying? Like, those are two really big buckets that I still haven't gotten clarity on, really.
You're exactly right. You know, on the COVID era funding, it is such a big issue, and we don't talk about it in explicit terms at the legislature, although I try to. You know, the American Rescue Plan was the largest single bailout of the federal government in the history of the United States of America. It was multiples of the Marshall Plan. And, you know, you say that, well, it's exactly what you described is what is happening, which is people got used to those COVID era programs. And now the lack of COVID funding is being interpreted or felt rather as a cut. Well, it's not a cut. It's a return to the post-COVID era because with the COVID we experienced is over. But people don't experience it or feel it that way. They feel it as a cut. So why is the rug being pulled out from under us? And the answer is that was a one-time thing. So I struggled with that on my campaign because I struggled with that issue on the campaign because when people are saying, oh, we're bringing the bacon home to the district. Well, yeah, you know, there was a massive slush fund for Connecticut. It was easy to bring stuff back to the district in that kind of environment. So you're absolutely right on that. The second thing on the quality of meals, you know, we're in a real state of flux because the food pyramid that we grew up with or I grew up with is changed. You know, I'm not making a comment on the federal government's health policies, but what I'm saying is the fact is it's changed.
Well, so and even the quality of our food, I mean, so much of it is processed compared to what it was even when we were growing.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just very different. Yeah, absolutely.
It is. And so with the food pyramid shifting and, you know, the funding mechanism right now in Connecticut for subsidies for free school meals is coming largely, if not exclusively, from the federal government. So people are, there was just an article which came out on this in the last month, which is, okay, now that the food pyramid is changing at the federal level, we assume that the federal funding that comes for that comes for free breakfast and free and reduced lunch is going to require that schools serve the foods that are in accordance with the new pyramid. So does that mean we're going to get more money because those foods are more expensive? Produce, proteins, healthy fats, et cetera, versus processed foods and carbs, which is where the pyramid shifted to. Are we going to get more money to support the new federal guidelines for what we need to serve? That's a big question out there. So that is shifting under us as we consider this bill. And on the sustainability point, it's exactly what you said. You know, in Connecticut right now, statewide, 44% of our students qualify for either free breakfast or free or reduced lunch. In my district, I serve Greenwich and Stamford. Stamford has 51% of kids that qualify. Greenwich has 19.5% of kids who qualify. So here we're sitting, you know, with a state program that's now giving us a mandate, and is the money going to be behind it to back it up? That's a question I'm going to have today in committee, because the governor put out a number. He put out $12.5 million for breakfast and $500,000 for lunch. So I looked at that. I don't know what it costs to feed a child for a year free breakfast, but if you take the federal numbers and the federal dollars and you divide it and you arrive at a per student cost, that $12.5 million is not enough.
The math isn't adding up. Right. No, you're right. The math isn't adding up. We're chatting with Representative Tina Corpus here, talking about universal free breakfasts for students across Connecticut. And again, on the surface, the concept is great. I can't imagine anyone saying, no, let the kids starve. That's what we want. Get out of here with that. Let's look at, though, the biggest challenges with this. First of all, is it sustainable? Obviously, things cost money. So is this something we're only going to offer for a year? And then how do you look at those kids and say, sorry, you weren't worth it to continue funding this program? And the second thing is the quality of food. I'm curious, Representative Corpus, and obviously this doesn't fall on just you. This is, you know, for lawmakers alike in Hartford to kind of determine this. How much do local farms play a role in providing, A, the good quality food, but also figuring out how we afford maybe to be able to continue offering this? Do farms play a vital role in this? And then my second question kind of has to do more with something you talked about, which is, you know, waste of food. How much do schools play a role in figuring out, normalizing that if a kid doesn't like the food that they are offered, that's okay. They don't have to feel shamed for it. If they don't like a banana, they don't have to eat the banana. It's okay, but give it back. Don't just throw it out. I mean, I would think that this is beyond just lawmakers and what is our budget. I think this takes a multi-prong effort from different entities to make this work.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You know, on that, you know, what do we do for farm to table? Do we have gardens in schools? How are we promoting healthy eating in a low cost way that actually also supports Connecticut farmers and is a win-win for all? The answer is we are doing that. At the state level in the Appropriations Committee, we appropriate monies to nonprofits that tackle exactly the issues you just described. You know, we have a lot of nonprofits that perform social services for our state, and it's a model that works. Nonprofits can do it at a lower cost level. Nonprofits are in their respective communities and know what the communities need. Nonprofits can do a lot of things that the state government would not be as good at doing. I personally feel like we don't monitor where we don't have enough accountability for the nonprofits we fund, but that's a separate issue. Anyway, so there are nonprofits that are doing this and doing it very successfully. Also, school districts can go beyond what the requirements of nutrition are at the federal level if they're receiving federal money for their lower-income students for meals, and plenty of them do that. I went to a school, New Lebanon Elementary School in Greenwich, and it was Carrot Day, which was a lot of fun for the kids and for me, and they have a garden in the back of the school, and they were learning about the nutrition value of the carrot, and they served carrots in the cafeteria that day. And that was a combination of nonprofits in the area and also the school taking the initiative to do that. Other schools have done similar things. So we're doing, I would say, a good job of that. And we are, schools are getting creative on those topics, and I think it helps a lot. With respect to how are schools creating the culture of eating healthy and the culture of no stigma if you don't like a food, you know, I think schools have a role to play in that, and they should support those healthy habits. But sometimes I worry that we're asking our schools to do too much. Mm. You know, where is that line? Of course, the school's job is to educate the kids. The school is providing busing to get the kids there. The school is, which it should, the school is providing school supplies. The school is providing food. The school is providing other kinds of social supports. It's providing all of these things. And I don't know if we're at the line yet. I don't think the line is food. Don't misunderstand me. But the school can't manage every behavioral and preference-oriented behavior in the kids. It just can't. So I don't know where that line is. But I worry about that issue.
Yeah. It just, again, I think it's not this closed door of, okay, it's easy. We got it. Here's the answer. And we move on. I just think people need to widen the lens and realize that I'm glad that you want to vote for this to kind of move forward and to see what this looks like. But again, it does concern me a little bit that we really don't have any clear answers still at this point, since the governor brought this up almost a month ago in his State of the State, that we really don't know what that looks like as far as sustainability is concerned and the quality. I think that is concerning, to your point, that we still don't really have answers on that, but maybe that will come out in more of these discussions and see if this moves forward and into the Appropriations Committee. So I want to thank you, Representative Corpus, for what you do, but also for giving us the time here on WICC. And we'd love to continue tracking this, as I think it's a really important conversation to keep having on WICC. So thank you.
It was a great pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Absolutely. Again, Representative Corpus here on WICC.